Welcome to the Pure Bliss Show with Mama Carmo. This is where we'll inspire you to transcend, transform, make magic, live your soul purpose, and be the unicorn that you truly are. Live in pure bliss.
Hi, this is Mama Carmo, and you're on the Pure Bliss Show. Today, my amazing guest is Molly Pompidis, the founder and CEO of the Soar Community Network. Molly's also an author, a speaker, and a marketing strategist. Molly, welcome to the Pure Bliss podcast.
Hi, Mama. Thank you so, so much for having me.
You're welcome. So, Molly, we've been friends for many years. I love you as a friend, but also I love your heart. I love how you turned your passion into your purpose and into your business. So I wanted to chat with you a bit about how you've gone from, you know, having these dreams and visions and going from there into figuring out how to monetize your business and how to soar and live a blissful life.
All right. Wow. I don't even know where I begin, Mama. First and foremost, yes, we've been friends for a very, very long time. And I think one of the things that's very important for us to talk about on Pure Bliss is really just the community of people who really do hold you up when you're feeling down or when you're unsure, feeling lost in your life, so that you can have the freedom, creativity to explore what you even want out of life. I think that's really where it begins. And that's really where it began for me to really uncover what it is that I truly wanted out of life. You and I both come from a background of war. We both had to escape war, you know, in our different ways. You in Liberia, me from Laos. And when you're a child of war and when you come to a foreign land, you're feeling alone, you're feeling isolated, but you're also an adult before you're ever a child. And that's really what happened in my case, to be honest with you. I was the adult. I was doing bills by the time I was 7 or 8 years old. I was always parenting my parents in many ways to guide them through this land because of the lack of language and all those barriers. So I really didn't know that my gifts and my passions were my own. I was just focused on surviving and making sure everything was okay for myself and for my family.
I'm glad you mentioned, you know, being an immigrant and coming to this country. I think that's really shaped who you are as a person. You know, challenges do make you stronger. And tell me more about how you came from Laos to the country and how that helped to give you the foundation for who you are today.
Thank you. Well, I came out of Laos when I was only 4 years old, and my father worked for basically the old government of Laos. He was a humanitarian social worker, but he was on the list as a government worker, so he was blacklisted. And all of that tumultuousness and fears really drove him to figure out how to get out of the country. I mean, he was also in prison. He escaped the re-education camps. And really, there was just no life that he saw for his children and for his wife and at the time also his mother-in-law, which my grandmother. So he plotted and planned for 2-3 years secretly to get us out of the country. And that's what we did. We escaped one night, very late in the night, and ended up all 6 and a half of us. My mom was 7 months pregnant with my brother. And we got on a boat and we crossed the Mekong River. And making a long story short, we found safe haven with some relatives that stuck us inside a produce truck, hid us, and kept us for a couple weeks until we can find our way to the refugee camp and sneak inside because the refugee camps were overpopulated. So that's really where it all began. And then less than a year later, with a lot of petitioning and support from relatives here in the U.S., we were able to find a church who would sponsor our entire family. And we came here with absolutely nothing. My parents had to work 2 or 3 jobs, and we were on food stamps, whatever it took, really, and a tremendous help to the church. So in many respects, that also has shaped me in terms of how I see community, in terms of how I see getting support and helping strangers, because that tiny little church in Maryland really saved our lives. They never met us. They didn't know who we were. And I try and live my life thinking about the moments, those little big moments, right, that saved our lives and shaped our lives. And that's who I've become. And so the Soar Community Network, Uncovering My Passion, is all a part of my past that led me here. So the lack of having a sense of freedom or childhood didn't allow me to play, didn't allow me to uncover my gifts, didn't allow me, because of lack of money, to pursue and create talent until I was about 35 when I was okay.
As you're talking, you were telling your story, and as being somebody who's known you for quite some time, I heard some themes about that story that have really fed into the person I know today, which is Molly. Your dad and your parents escaping on that boat, to me, what that showed me was that you learned at a young age to be very fearless, to pursue something despite the fear, right? Them doing that was a very fearless process, even though it was fearful. To me, fearless means moving through your fear, despite the actual fear being there. It also shows me that, you know, you learned fortitude. I mean, you're a strong person to go through that at a young age and help your family and work and all that. That shows me that feeds into who you are today as a person that's very strong. And then also it speaks to your sense of idealism about the world, which I still see in you at this age, you know? So I think that people sometimes forget about how their family history and molds them, but you've always retained those characteristics, which I really admire about you as a person today.
Oh, thank you, Mima. That's very kind, because sometimes we, and myself included, you know, we are so tapped into the things that made us feel afraid or in many respects even resent. Like, there were many years, to be quite honest, and this is what the show is all about at Pure Bliss, is I was a bit resentful for many years that I really didn't have a childhood, and I couldn't play like my friends could play. You know, my parents didn't have money, so I couldn't do the extracurricular activities, and I had to work by the time I was able to get a working permit. So at 15, I had to work, and I worked pretty much full time and went to school full time. So there were many years. I don't regret any of it now, but living in that moment, we forget that those tough times, and we can say that, you and I, you know, at our age now looking back, that those were blessings. But I think the most important message here is that if you're living right now in this moment, going through hard times, going through situations where you feel like you're never going to get out of this situation, where why me? You know, why couldn't my family have this? Or why are we so poor? Or all this stuff, right? Those experiences are the things that actually help us get through life, because life is harsh and it can be painful, filled with trauma and tragedies. And I think when you can experience tough times and come out on the other side, you bounce back much quicker emotionally than others who have not experienced tough times. So think of those things with grace and with gratitude, even though it's hard in the moment. So that's definitely
100%.
One thing that I've learned. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I really believe a challenge can be a gift. As you mentioned, Molly, like when I came here as a refugee myself, I was 15 years old. My dad put me on a plane alone at 15. And so same thing as you, I came here with nothing, with one suitcase, having to work two or three jobs at 15, 16 years old. And, you know, and my entire family came at some point, and there were about 10 of us in a small apartment with two bedrooms. Mm-hmm. My bed was the couch for many years. At the time, even, you know, I thought, why is this happening to me? I'm supposed to be in college right now. I was an all-A student. And then when I got into college, my college mates were all partying, having fun, and I had to work to put myself through school. So there was no playing. But one of the things I've learned, especially knowing you, is that God gives you what you need when you need it. And you don't always see that gift in the moment when you're suffering or going through a challenge. But I used to think, I'm never going to have a childhood. I never had a childhood. When I met you, I remember you and I were talking one time about, we met and we were kindred spirits, and we thought, now it's time to play. We've worked so hard our entire lives, and he brought us together like he's brought other friends into your life, into my life. And think that I really love what you just said about, you know, about people appreciating or being grateful for the moment. But I think I want to reiterate that, because it's so important, especially with the world today, that whatever is challenging you right now can at some point be the biggest gift. So just think of it as a blessing in disguise. So thank you, Molly, for mentioning that. Tell me about, so your past life, you were in the financial services industry. You were doing that kind of work. And I remember you talking to me about, you're feeling a little bit of some kind of like a rub. You were like, I like my work, but I'm not truly giving who I am to the world. I want to be able to help people to know what their gifts are, to articulate them, and to be able to live the lives they're meant to live. Tell me about how your past history propelled you to leave a comfortable salary and job to do something that was totally new and different.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
Crazy.
Well, yeah. So the last comment that you were saying about, you know, just your blessings, the painful times, and being appreciative of all that. That's really the epitome of life coming to you full circle and realizing, okay, at some point, I can't live in that place of pain and victim and fear forever. And that's really what it came down to. You know, when you have your entire life and you've created a story, which at the time happened to be the truest of stories for you, that your life is hard, that you have all these losses and traumas and pain, and maybe you'll never have a life that is yours and that you can get to design. And at 35, I realized, wow, I have this career that I actually like, in fact, love because of working with people. I was making quite a bit of money for someone who was in their 20s. I was really just feeling like I had everything together on paper. But what started happening, Mema, was all those years of neglecting the inner soul and not allowing it to shine in terms of who I truly am as a whole and not how life has defined me or shaped me, really started to pull at the core of my being. And I say that because I think all of us deep down know when our gut tells us something is wrong. And we keep going in life, so we don't really pay attention to it. And I just was starting to really hear and started dreaming and started having all these health issues because I wasn't listening. I was just so used to going and surviving and working. And I just didn't feel fulfilled. And I was like, what's wrong? What is wrong that I don't feel fulfilled? I have money now. I'm not starving. I'm not on food stamps anymore. My parents are okay. Everybody's financially fine. And I get to contribute now to helping my family. What is wrong that I'm not happy? And I say that because there's so many of us in the world that get to this place, but we continue to ignore it. I was there. I ignored it for 3 years, and I kept getting sick, and I kept going to the doctors, and I couldn't find out what was wrong. I couldn't sleep. And I finally said, okay, I need to just meditate and pause and center myself and start to figure out what would make me happy from an internal standpoint, not on paper, not my resume. That has already been done mm-hmm. to me. I mean, I was valedictorian, I was straight A's, I was 3 degrees, 4 languages. I mean, overachiever. I knew I overdid it. But I was not blissful. And that's when you know something is wrong, and that's when I think you have to challenge yourself to go deeper and do the work to find what bliss and harmony actually feels like. And I never knew or had anything to compare it to because I never had a chance to feel harmonious and blissful and at peace ever since I could remember. And so that's how it all began. And I just took the time to do a lot of personal development, Mema. I read so many different books. I went to and invested in retreats. And then I spent about a year building a vision board that I just didn't rush in one sitting to do. I waited, and when I started seeing words and signs and hearing music, I would start to pull those things that really spoke to my core. And I began to, what I call today, doing a mapping process of my mm-hmm. gifts, of my talents, of all of my experiences, good, bad, ugly, put it all down on paper, and then step away from it as if it was an outer body experience, as if that were not my life, but someone looking over it. And I started to see how they all related and how it all connected and how all of those things were my gift. My life is my gift. My pain is what's going to heal me and heal other people. And that's when I decided that it was time to leave financial services, decided that it was time to really step into my purpose, which was this mapping process that liberated me is what I do now to liberate others so that they can find their authentic voice and take their message to market. That's what I do today with SEN, taking people's message to market, whether they're business owners or independent brands, and then getting marketing and strategy. All that is second to vision, mission, and goal setting and mapping.
That's powerful. I wanted to bring up something. I love how you invested time in yourself and time in that process. You know, you mentioned that your vision boarding process wasn't a one-day thing or a weekend thing. It was a year-long process of putting together a vision board that felt right for you. And as you evolved over that year, you began to feel within your spirit when things were clicking and felt good for you and felt blissful or gave you joy and energy. So I think it's important that people think about investing that time in themselves. People often think, well, I don't have the time to sit there and make a vision board or to map something out or to go to a retreat or go to a conference. I don't have the money to do that. But like you just spoke about, you know, we're born into this body and this life as who we are one time. And so to not make the investment in yourself is, to me, it's a travesty, because when you take the time to love your soul, to love your spirit, to go through the hard process of discovering who you are, and that's the biggest investment you can make in your life. And also, it's not just a one-time investment. It's also a recurring thing you do. Like, you go to work, you shower every day, investing in yourself. So you don't shower once a week and think, okay, I showered this today, I'm good, peace out, we're good for the week. So likewise, learning and the evolution of the self and the soul is a lifelong process.
Well, you know what else, Mema? I think it's also important when we talk about personal development, and you and I talk about this as friends all the time, right? Taking the time to just like really understand yourself, listen to your body, listen to your heart. But I do want to make a comment. You don't uncover or invest time in personal development because you don't do it just because it's a cool thing to do to the outside world. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, it's cool,
yep,
because everybody's doing yoga. It's cool because everybody's doing vision, mission, or you know, vision boards. You don't do it because it's cool, and you don't not do it because it's not cool, because there are a lot of people who believe that it's not cool, right? The stuff is woo-woo. The
really?
Stuff is crazy.
Who
I don't have time
they?
For that. They
right.
exist, and you and I have met them, right? But my point is, you don't do it for anybody else. You do it because somewhere deep down in your being, there comes a time in all of our lives where the spiritual side of who we are, that soulful side of who we are, and the human side of who we are will collide, because we're meant to be spiritual. We are spiritual beings here living this very human existence. And if that weren't meant to be, then you would, you know, be an animal, or another type of animal, or you would be, I don't know, the clouds or what have you. But you're here in human form. And at some point, I think all of us get to a place where internally something is not right. The compass is not skewed and it's not calibrated. And that's when you have to listen, not because your friends are doing it, not because some magazine says it's a trend. None of that, because it doesn't help you unless you're listening to your own body and your own needs, and the timing is right for you.
Yeah, that's exactly true. You know, as you were talking, I was thinking about the fact that when you began your soul business, which you do now, people weren't saying at first it's woo-woo, it's kind of, you know, flaky, up in the air. And when I began to pursue my soul purpose, people were laughing. You would call me and you're like, oh my God, people were, you know, not supporting me. And even when I began, when I left my six-figure salary to begin my charity, and then which has led me to living a more blissful life, people thought I was crazy. They're like, why would you leave that, a stable job, for something that you have to create from scratch? It doesn't even exist yet. So I think the idea people have is that pursuing your bliss, pursuing your soul purpose, pursuing your gifts and talents is a woo-woo, not real thing. But I think it's actually more practical to pursue your soul purpose and pursue your bliss, and that leading you towards your job. Tell me about how you've done that, because you've done just that. I remember we talked about it, and you went from a couple conversations to execution, and now you have SCN and you have clients, and you actually are, when I see you now, I'm so proud, because you're glowing, you're happy. So, you know, and that's a scary process to leave the comfortable and the secure for something that you feel in your heart. How do you tell your parents, well, I'm leaving this wonderful job that pays my bills and I have insurance and all that to learn how to soar? You know, like, and so I think I want you to give people who are listening some practical tips on following that soul purpose path to, you know, how do you go from the idea of it to executing it? How do you help your clients do that every day?
Well, number one, I mean, because this is what we do, it really is just having honest conversations first and foremost with the person that's looking at you, you know, from the mirror. I think that really being honest with yourself about what you want and what you don't want is the first step. If you're not happy, you have to be able to say it out loud, even if no one else is in the room, because it becomes a reality. It's not just like a feeling anymore. So that's number one. You have to be willing to do that. You have to be willing to tell yourself the truth. And then number two, you have to start looking for very, very close friends that you trust, that love you, that they will tell you and give you honest feedback, but it's coming from a place of love. You start to message to them. You start to tell them the truth, because you do want to get out of your own skin sometimes so that you can get feedback. So that's number two, is start to message what makes you happy. What are you missing? Because sometimes we forget to ask for help, and our close friends and people we trust are the ones who know us, and they can see what we cannot see. Oftentimes that is the case. The third thing in terms of practical tips is, once you articulate it, once you see it, own it, articulate it for yourself and for close advisors and mentors, you then really have to be willing to release it. And what that means is you have to believe in your own story, or this new version of you, like nobody's business. Because, like, the reason why I said, oh my gosh, earlier, Rayma, is because people have always told both of us, and we talk about this, oh, you know, you guys are so strong. You've been through so much. And I can see that you guys are just so courageous and brave and fearless. And it's as if we don't have those moments. In fact, we have a lot of moments of weakness and tears.
So yes, we do. Many
conversations when you and I have cried together about, why am I doing this? Why am I putting my heart out there and claiming that this is my passion, trying to help people, but being kicked in the gut, being laughed at, you know, being ridiculed, telling that you're stupid. Why are you doing this? You're giving up all that money and you're doing what? And in my case, it was, you're messaging from the heart. What the hell is that?
What does that mean? It was
such a foreign concept. Yeah. And here I was, trying to be idealistic, trying to allow the inner child in me that never got to play to help people do the things that I lacked, which was not really allowing my light to shine and always being preoccupied with survival and not blissful. So those are three things. The fourth, like I said, is to believe in what you're doing, believe in your purpose like nobody's business. And the fifth is never give up. Every time you get kicked in the gut, every time the market crashes and clients leave you, every time you do a webinar and like the technology tanked and you were embarrassed, every time that you told the world that this was going to happen because you were so excited and then a contract fell through and you have to, like, you know, put your tail between your legs and walk, you know, like carefully again, you just keep going, because there's a whole world of people waiting for you to get from crawling with your passion to slightly jogging to like sprinting, and taking them, leading the way for them, because you had the courage to step into your greatness and to change the world in your own unique way. Imagine everybody having that power, because they do. And I think that that would be an ideal world, when everybody steps in and gifts us with what they were created to gift us. Because we're waiting for it.
That is so beautiful. I love that. I think that as we all learn to stand up and shine, then that light just gets brighter and brighter, and it just brightens the world. I think also that, you know, your story is a testimony of strength, but also one of your past really has fed into your fortitude, you know, because you've been on food stamps before. You've been almost homeless. You've been where you didn't have anything. And so I'm sure that, like, for me, sometimes it's scary when I'm building something and it's not working, or I'm afraid it's not going to work. But I've been to the worst of places. So I know that no matter how bad it is now, it can't get much worse than it was when I was sleeping on a couch for, you know, 3, 4, 5 years with 10 people in a house. You know, also too, you know, it's more painful to stay in a stuck place. To me, when I was in my job making all that money and I had property and I was comfortable, my life was very painful. My heart, my soul hurt. I felt like something was missing in my life. And as scary as it was to leave my job and to begin something new and different, the more I delved into that new path, the more I soared. And so I think it's important to, you know, think about, it's more painful to stay stuck than to choose to soar. And then also, I love what you said about having people around you who believe in you, because any innovator, anybody who's created change, anybody you think about in the world who is a leader, living or long gone, the legacy they've left is having people around them who believe in them, that when they were told they were crazy, or, you know, what are you hearing in your head, or what are you seeing that we don't see? They had a tribe that said, you're on the right track. I believe in you. So it's really important to have a tribe that gets you, that sees what you don't see. And even if they don't see what you see, they tell you, well, I believe in you, that I trust that you'll get to where you're trying to go. Talk about how you felt and attracted and engaged, and now you're uplifting your tribe.
I think it was a lot of trial and tribulation to build SEN and the community that we have now. It's SOAR Community Network. When I first tried to build a community, I was not in a place of abundance. I was scared. I was starting the business. A lot of personal stuff was going on, you know, the loss of my father, my grandmother being sick, the whole list of things that life throws at us. And when you're scared, this is a very important point for those that are listening, when you're scared and when you're alone and when you have when in your mindset there's a place of lack, I don't care what's in your bank account. If your spirit and your mindset is in a place of lack and in a place of fear, you can't operate at your fullest potential. You cannot operate. You cannot be authentic. You cannot, everything that you try, unless you change that mindset, unless you truly believe that things are going to be okay, will have the opposite effect. And so when I first launched the business, I was scared. I left this lots of money to no money. And I did a lot of things that I would do differently today, which is I really spent too much time trying to push people and convince people. And I didn't even know truly that I was doing it until now I'm looking back and some great constructive feedback from friends, right? And so it didn't work the first couple of years because people are like, what's wrong with her? She's trying too hard. She's asking for too much, you know, all those things.
Yeah.
And it was because I was not in flow. I was not trusting that what I had to offer was enough and that people would be attracted because I was in abundance. I was there just to give and the right people would receive. And until I understood that, and I could just let go and my shoulders kind of like, instead of, you know, that feeling of you're holding so tight and until yeah. I could release, until I could hold out my palm instead of keep it clenched, hoping that clients would show up, until I could learn to do that, nothing really happened the way that I had hoped. And the moment that I said, I'm going to trust that I'm on the right path, I'm going to trust my gut that what led me to make this change is right, then it all shifted. And it took a good 2.5 years. And it took some rebranding of, you know, I rebranded my business, changed the name, so many things I had to do to follow that sense of harmony, that sense of like just calm. And this is one thing that I've learned so much because I didn't understand even what calm was. Follow the calm. If you follow the calm, it's right. And that's why I
think. That is so powerful.
Thank you. I've learned that. I've learned that. And I know now this is why when you say, Marie, I'm so proud of you. You have the glow. It feels so liberating when you say that because finally I feel like I can receive it without trying so hard to get that acknowledgement. I just receive it because now I felt the freedom to feel calm. I sought help last year from a dear friend of ours who helped me go through some deep healing, hypnotherapy, deep meditations. I went to Peace Village with Sister Jenna in the Meditation Museum to really spend time with my soul and feel calm and feel peaceful. And I think that's really the key for all of us. How can we get to peace? How can we get to internal peace? Because that's when magic happens. That's when people are attracted to you. People are attracted to light. They're not attracted to dark. They're attracted to high energy, high frequency, you know, not scattered frequency.
Yeah. So, you know, because I know you, I'm going to ask this question. You talked about following that peace and the calm, but you also have rituals that you partake in every morning and throughout the day that allow you to start your day off in a place where you are calm, where your vision's clear. And then you also do things throughout the day that reinforce and that calm you and support your calm and your state of bliss that also help you to do what you do well. So, and I do too, but you're the guest on the show. I want you to tell people, what are some of the rituals that you follow in the morning and throughout the day that sustain your calm?
I love that you brought this up because I think all of our friends and colleagues and also your listeners, it's really important that people understand you don't just wake up in the state that you desire, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, You wake up with what bad dreams sometimes. If you've had a lot of trauma, there's all this healing that's going on in your deep sleep. And sometimes you wake up on the very wrong side of the bed. And if you want that state of consistent calm, you have to use tools. There's no way of getting around it. You don't just, you know, say, oh, well, the day is bad and accept it. You can't do that if you want to be in harmony consistently. You've got to take back your own calm. So rituals. Rituals, when I get up in the morning, is I open my eyes and I look over and I see my husband and I am just grateful. Because there were many years when I didn't have love. There were many years when I never thought I would find love because of having a tragic loss with my late fiancé, as you know, Mema. So that's one ritual, is just being grateful, opening up my eyes, and whether it's snowing or sunshine, and just saying, okay, I have another day. We could start over again. But it's intentional and mindful. Second, when I go and sit up, I do stretches, and it doesn't have to be anything crazy. I do it in bed, or I get up and, you know, I do it before I go to the bathroom and brush my teeth. So I do stretches, and then that's my moment to just meditate. And meditation is not like a 30 minute, 1 hour ritual. It could be 5 minutes. It could be 10 minutes just to breathe, pay attention to your breathing. And then when I go in the shower every morning for just 2 to 5 minutes, a friend of mine, Bev Nirenberg, taught me many years ago how to do EFT, how to do an emotional freedom technique, which tapping. Is tapping. And yeah. That's what I do in the shower. And now it becomes my everyday thing.
Tell me what tapping is. Tell me more about the tapping piece.
So tapping stands for emotional freedom technique. And it's based on, and I'm no expert, but it's based on major acupuncture points. So, you know, places in your body that are what you would call like where your energy can easily get blocked. So you're helping through your own fingertips and also with some positive reinforcement through words, tap out and move and flow, let energy flow through your body. So if you have, you know, tension in your stomach or in your shoulder, or if you have a headache, you tap on these meridian points, they call it, and you do 3 or 4 different cycles, or as many cycles as it takes, until you feel a sense of release and a sense of calm and a sense of just like you can just allow yourself over time. If you do this long enough, you can start to feel the points of your body and the energy moving. And it makes a big difference, because when you're tense or you're worried about a big contract or you're nervous about a big speech you're going to give or meeting a new person, every morning in the shower, because I have to take a shower anyway, and I do these taps. They're key points, and you can look it up. I mean, you can Google it. You can EFT, or they call it tapping, and great books as well. And it just really empowers you with your own body, your own mind, your own words, your own hands. Release the energy to allow you to begin the day with a sense of calm. And I think that is really the key word, is how do we learn to calm our nerves, our anxiety, our fears? And right. No one else is going to do that for us. We have to find the right tools that work for us. And those are the types of things that work for me. And you know this about me. I love writing my feelings. So I journal and I have a gratitude log. And I don't beat myself up if I don't enter something in every day, but I am mindful. So if I go a day or two without it, I'm like, wow, it's been a couple of days that I've not been writing down my gratitude. And if I don't write it down, then I at least verbalize it.
Right. I just always love talking to you. You're a wealth of information about business, about marketing, about spirituality, and you're a walking, living testament about, to me, but how to really live, you know, how to live your life and grow and find peace. I love what you said about being mindful. And I think it's such an important word. It's sometimes overused, and so people forget or don't really hear what the word means. You mentioned getting hypnotherapy as well and how that's helped you. And as you know, I also saw your friend that was now our mutual friend. And one of the things she taught me is about noticing, which is also being mindful. It's so important to notice, you know, as individuals, how we're being, to notice our habits. So there's some things you might think, you know, this is who I am, this is how I am, and that's that. No, it's not always how you are. It's as you notice who you are, notice your habits, notice your tics, notice your trigger points, Those can really feed into you being more blissful because, you know, as I've matured and become who I am, I used to think at first, well, this is how I am. And that mindset would block me from getting further in life towards getting towards my goal, to my soul goals, because I had an idea of this is what life is and I'm stuck here. But when I began to notice my thoughts that were limiting, noticing my trigger points, things that caused me to be anxious and stressed out, I began to learn how to eliminate things that were blockers for me and to eliminate, you know, the stressors, the anxieties, and then begin to really grow into somebody who the person I really wanted to be. So I think the word mindful, also known as noticing, is so important. And that's also part of your ritual and part of my, well, every night I lay down in bed, I think about how my day was and what did I notice about myself that I did that I liked and what would I want to change the next day. And as I go through my day, the next morning, I begin the next day, I think about how I'm behaving, what I'm thinking, and most importantly, how I'm feeling, because the feeling is your gut response to your energy and to so forth. And then as you feel, you begin to think and you begin to act. So I always notice how I'm feeling. And that really is a powerful exercise. When you talk about rituals, I think if you do nothing all day, for me, I do three things. I'm grateful all the time. I meditate and pray constantly. I'm always mindful and noticing how I'm being. And I think that's really important to share with our listeners as well. It feeds into your personal life and your business life, and you know, in many ways. And so Molly, we've been talking about a lot of serious stuff for the past half hour. Not serious, but you know, kind of you know, just soul and purposeful and work and business. Tell me how you play. Because we love to play, don't we? How does Molly play?
Yes. Oh gosh, I am just completely, you know, going back in my mind in this instant on the day that you and I sat down together at a restaurant and we were talking, yes, and sharing about just the heaviness in our lives and how different it is now to choose lightness and to choose to play, and that we made a commitment to each other to just spend more time playing with our friends as adults, like to really allow our inner child to explore the way that she, in my case, has never explored before. So one way that I play is I love music. So I began right when I started this business almost 6 years ago now. Can you believe that I launched this business 6 years ago this month? It's crazy.
Has it been 6 years?
It's been 6 years. Yes.
I
started to write music because I've always been a poet, but I started to learn. My dear friend Mona Lisa Arias taught me the difference between poetry and then using those messages and those words and turning that into music and melody. So that's how I play. Victor, my husband, is also a musician. So, you know, a couple of years ago, we started a band. So every chance we get, we're making music, creating music, you know, writing original stuff. And then we get together with friends and we play. We play music. I love to garden. That's my play area. I love nature. So I love planting seeds and sowing them and sharing all the great harvests with people. That's how I play. I love to dance, actually. I haven't been dancing in a long time, but I love to just turn on the music and dance and just be a kid, you know? And to be honest with you, the times that I enjoy most are just taking long walks and talking with my friends, talking with my family, and just being close with the people that matter to me most. And you and I understand this, you know, because when you've experienced a lot of loss and people who are no longer in our lives and they're on the other side now, we value the little things. So the little things make me happy, and that's how I play. You know, I listen to the birds, and I, in the morning, I'm like, oh, they're the birds. And I'm just present. I guess that's the best way to describe how I play now is I allow the little things to light up my life. I don't ignore them. I don't, you know, make them minuscule. They're big things to me.
That's beautiful. And I was going to ask you how you lift lists, but you just told me how you lift lists. It's how you play every day. And that's wonderful. We're going to be wrapping up soon. Before we sign off, what is one thing you want to impart the listeners as a parting word to inspire them to live blissfully in their everyday lives?
Well, I would say before you find your bliss, you have to first find harmony and calm within your spirit. And there's going to be different ways in which you can find that center place for yourself. It doesn't mean that you're going to follow every instruction or every tip and tool that Mame and I are sharing on the show. You have the responsibility, the will, and the choice to find your own calm and harmony and self-love. When you can start to love yourself, when you can start to see hope that there's a greater life for yourself, especially if you're not in a happy place right now. We've all been there. You are not alone. And you might be there for a couple years, but nothing stays the same. And if you can think of that as a gift and not an anchor, then you will know that every day you wake up, even when it's heavy, that it's a day closer to your calm, your peace, and you're opening toward a better, more free and emotional freedom life. And I think that whatever you need to do, little baby steps are the most important, is to trust that it's going to absolutely get better, because the law of the universe is that it won't stay the same. And if you can use that and turn it into positive change, then there's hope that you can live with every day to allow yourself to keep going. And I would say, just being down in the darkest of places, that little tiny, tiny speck of light that I just kept my eyes on in the darkest hours of my life was really the hope that I needed to get here now. And that's what I would love to encourage you to do, is if you can just believe that that speck of light, your North Star, is going to one day open up to this beautiful life that you'll have. Don't give up.
That was powerful. You're amazing. I mean, I would love to have Molly in my pocket, like wherever I go. But since I can't clone you, how can we find you and follow you? Like, tell me about what your Facebook pages are, your Twitter, your Instagram. How do we, clone Molly on our social media and have a bit of you every day, all the time?
You're so sweet, Mama. Thank you so much.
You're amazing.
Thank you. To follow my personal pages, Facebook, it would just be Molly Ponpadith. It's M-A-L-I. Last name is P-H-O-N-P-A-D-I-T-H. And you can Google me. So it's Molly Ponpadith for my social media handles. But for the SOAR Community Network and the work that we do for brands and businesses, it would be SOAR Community Network. Our Twitter handle is @ SOAR with SCN. And you can find me online, LinkedIn, all that good stuff. So just plug my name or plug SOAR Community Network in there, and we'll show up. And of course, info@ SOAR Community Network is a great way to reach our business. And Mali@ SOAR Community Network is a great way to reach me. And Mema, thank you for the opportunity to just share. And
yes,
I love having just a conversation with you, because it's like being on a regular phone conversation when we spend hours together. This was awesome.
We have to have wine next time. So what is
yes.
Wonderful. I love you. I love you dearly. I'm so thankful for the gift that you are to the world. And to our listeners, thanks for joining me, Mema Carmo, on the Pure Bliss Show. Until next time, live bliss, love bliss, and be bliss. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Pure Bliss Show with Mema Carmo. We hope you are inspired by the show. Remember, you're the catalyst that the world has been waiting for. In each moment, live in pure bliss.